is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, number 99 still, the official UK Seahawkers podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, is, as ever, joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm doing well. I am 7.5 hours away from doing a 25-hour food and drink fast, but these things are always more palatable when there's a couple of wins in the back pocket, so yeah, it could be worse.
Yeah, it could be us joining us this week as we welcome back on one of our regular guests, Rob Staton. How are we, Rob?
I'm very good. I'm just preparing to do a two-hour fast. So when I have lunch, I'll send Adam a note saying how much I enjoyed it.
That'd be really kind and exactly what I'm looking for in my time of strife.
Wilson keeps, airs it out, downfield, the rookie! Touchdown, DK Metcalf. They hand to Gurley. Tried to get to the edge, then cut up field, and Bobby Wagner is out there. The ball came out. Belongs to Seattle. And Jadeveon Clowney combine. It's Bobby Wagner who's ripping at it right there. Wilson floats it. Disley, what a throw and catch. Oh. 48-yard try, wide snap. The kick is no good.
Timeout, plenty of time.
Wilson fakes it to him, now ducks through, takes off, slides for the first down. Here's a throw to Moore, sidesteps for the touchdown. David Moore. Quick snap, Goff reaches and got it.
They rule this short. You can thank Al Woods for that. He does a great job.
Reviewing the try, the runner was short. The try is no good.
Carson. Reeder couldn't bring him down. Flag is down. Carson has a first down and more out at the 45. Wilson steps through, flips wide open, and caught after a juggle for the touchdown, Carson. Goff throws, pass incomplete for Everett. And that picture says it all. That did not hit the turf.
After reviewing the play, the defender had his hands underneath the ball and maintained possession. It is an interception.
Zerline missed it.
So obviously we are talking a few days, just to settle, took a few days for the just to settle after a Seahawks Thursday night football. Well, for the outsiders and the neutrals, it seemed to go down as a bit of a 2019 classic. The Seahawks surviving just against the LA Rams 30-29. What was your initial takeaways from the game, Rob?
It felt like a very similar game to the Green Bay game and the Kansas City game last year, you know, kind of back and forth, very competitive, kind of really going down to the wire. And, you know, like a really good win for the Seahawks, a little bit of fortune at the end with a kick. But then perhaps they deserved that with the fact that they'd already won the game with the Tedrick Thompson interception and then just needed a first down and then botched that completely. And, you know, in fact, if that kick goes over, then we're probably talking about a very different thing this week. But, you know, good to get 4-1. It's very easy to forget that this is a team that is still in some form of a reset. And unlike some other teams, they are not, you know, at the peak of their powers and probably won't be till next year. So every win should be celebrated. And the fact that they've had this fantastic start, there's only one team in the NFL after 5 weeks with more wins than the Seahawks, is a major achievement.
Yeah, Adam?
I think it comes back to what we were saying in the summer, that we just wanted this season to be more fun and to enjoy it. And I bumped into Rob at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday, and we both agreed that it was the first game for a while that, like, it had you jumping out of your seat with excitement. When Carson fumbled, bobbled the ball and caught it on that fourth and five play, I think it was, I was off the couch and jumping up, which is something that hasn't happened too often in the last year and a half or so, with been a bit stodgier and everyone's been a bit more negative. But I don't know, it kind of reminded me why I love the game so much, because it can give you just moments of sheer excitement, and it's what we wanted. And the fact that we're doing it and winning games at the same time, especially as we say, we thought this was going to be more of a transitional season than it so far looks. You know, what a bonus that is.
Yeah, I mean, it was the archetypal Seahawks primetime home game. I think I had messages from people who were there and who cover the team, and they've all said that the place, the Centric Field, the actual building, was just absolutely rocking on Thursday night. And all that kind of ties into that word fun as well, as you say, Adam. Because it was, I mean, that missed kick is the most I celebrated at that time in the morning, probably since the tip back in 2013. So the fact is, there's that big of a gap with this team, even though they're still winning games, is kind of testament to the fact that it was fun. All at the same time, it was a bit of survival. But everything from the game on Sunday, from Thursday, all centres around all the hype, for lack of better words, surrounds someone who appears at the top of the charts for the quarter pole MVP, Adam, in Russell Wilson. He was spectacular, on top of what has been a pretty spectacular start to his 2019 season, Adam.
Yeah, it just played so clean, and he just looked like he really picked the team up, put him on his back and said, right, we're going to win this, and it's going to be through me that we do it. And there was some degree of consternation in some quarters when he was given the big off-season money, and can you still win when your quarterback's been given that much money? But the way in which he's playing now, it currently looks a bargain, to be honest.
Yeah. Rob, he's the phrase that he's playing better than ever before is kind of perfect for how Russell Wilson started this year, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, he's had stretches in his career like this. He's just never done it at the start of the season. You know, Russell Wilson has been, he's kind of really followed the path of the Seahawks. So the Seahawks in previous years have not necessarily started seasons particularly well, and then they've grown into the season. Whereas this year they've started 4-1 and the quarterback started very, very well. And hopefully this will continue. You know, if he's going to win the MVP, he's going to have to do this pretty much for 16 games. He's going to have to keep this momentum going, because you know that Mahomes is going to throw for 50 touchdowns and have a very consistently productive year. So if he wants to be in the MVP race, he's got to keep this going. Now the Seahawks are going to have to keep winning. But this is a fantastic start and a real platform to build from here, especially going into a stretch of games, which is a bit of a gauntlet. You know, you've got 6 or 7 games coming up here that they could win or they could lose very easily. So it's going to be a big test for Russell and the rest of the team.
He did that, though, Adam, with just 23 pass attempts. And obviously, a few weeks ago, he threw for over 400 against the Saints in a losing effort, which could have been a heavier defeat, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Being as efficient as he was and as game-changing as he was in just 23 pass attempts kind of makes it that little bit more impressive, doesn't it?
It does, and I think that probably opens up what Rob was alluding to, that it would be interesting to see what the reaction would be had that kick gone through, because there's been a lot in the media about, you know, did they get some coaching decisions right? They chose to kick on fourth down in the first half when they were 4th and 1. And the game, I think I messaged you at the time saying, one more score here and the game's done, because they look about ready to break. So we could probably take it, the conversation onto that level, that, you know, Rob, what do you reckon about the passing numbers, which is probably slightly less important, but just in general, the talks about the coaching and some of the decisions made this week, and how different could everything be in Seahawk land had a ball moved 6 inches to the left versus to the right?
Well, I look at it kind of two ways. On the one hand, you could definitely go through the game and say that they could have done that differently. You know, I've read some very compelling arguments for not kicking it when they did at the end of the first half and should have gone for it and trying to score in that situation. Definitely can understand some of that. The play calling on the third down at the end of the game, which essentially gave the Rams a get-out-of-jail-free card for the interception, you could definitely quibble a little bit about that. And the fact that the defense in the second half struggled to adjust. The Rams adjusted sort of midway through the second quarter and then became unstoppable on offense. And the Seahawks didn't really have an answer until very late in the game. You could sort of list all those things and say, not a classically coached game from the Seahawks. But then I suppose the other way to look at it is, I think we kind of spend too much time analyzing things that don't go well with the Seahawks, and especially you see this on the internet, is, well, Pete Carroll got that one decision wrong, therefore let's spend, you know, several days after the game reflecting on that one thing, rather than sort of focusing on some of the positives and some of the things that are going right, which is essentially that this is a rebuilding team that is 4-1, that is, what, 14-7 over the 2018-2019 season, which has no real right to be winning as twice as many games as it's lost. And it does kind of suck the fun out of the team a little bit sometimes, not as much this year as last year, but, you know, we seem to spend an awful lot of time as a fan base talking about the philosophy of Pete Carroll and whether Pete Carroll's outdated or, you know, Pete Carroll's got a decision wrong. And pretty much every – I mean, would you rather have Freddie Kitchens? I mean, like, look at some of the other coaches out there that are really struggling at the moment. You know, Jay Gruden's just been fired. And I think, you know, you kind of can take these things for granted sometimes. We've had a decade of success where only the New England Patriots have won more games than the Seahawks in the Pete Carroll era. And yet it doesn't seem to be good enough for some people.
Yeah, I mean, I think someone tweeted over the weekend that all the talk of – people hated on the Seahawks, the people that hate the Seahawks the most seem to be Seahawks fans. It kind of showed that on Friday, well, early hours of Friday morning and all through the weekend until NBC and Kansas City tweeted out things about Patrick Mahomes' touchdown pass. But one more thing on Russell Wilson. He does lead the league through five weeks in completions, yardage, completion percentage, yards per attempt, touchdowns, and his and QB rating, and along with Mahomes, are the only quarterbacks not to throw an interception. But what of those 12 TDs he's thrown, Adam? There's not going to be many better before that he's thrown in his Seattle career or coming over the next 3 months than the one to Tyler Lockett in the first quarter in the back of that infamous end zone, Adam. It was ridiculous upon ridiculous, every aspect of it, really, wasn't it?
I wonder how many people in the stadium actually saw it as opposed to reaching down to grab a beer because they saw the ball flying out of bounds on a throwaway. Because I basically just sat back in my couch and then the ball was caught and then his feet were in bounds. And then I kind of tried to process all this information and thought, oh, yeah, that equals a touchdown. But it was ridiculous. I mean, there's even part of me that still thinks, and this might be doing Wilson a massive disservice, that like it was kind of a half throwaway to give you a chance as opposed to a throw to kind of with the intention to be completed. But it was just ridiculous. And the catch itself, I mean, there's so many, it's such a memeable thing with the Michael Jackson Smooth Criminal comparison with the Lockett toe tap. It was just incredible. I've never seen a play like it, I don't think.
Yeah, it was a safe throw, and the fact that Russell was either on purpose or wax and put it in a position where if it was going to be caught by either team, it was going to be something ridiculously athletic. It just happened to be from probably the smallest player on the field, didn't it, Rob?
Yeah, you know, I think it's quite interesting what you made earlier about the Mahomes thing. And I was watching the Kansas City game when we got back from London. And I don't generally get sort of wound up by things like this, but when Chris Collins was practically name-checking every quarterback except Russell Wilson as to who's ever done anything like this before. And you think, well, there was a throw like that just like 2 days ago, and that was, you know, and it was that game. And to throw across his body and to, yeah, you know what, it was a safe throw, but to put it in the one place, I mean, he could not have been any more accurate on that throw to give Tyler Lockett a chance to make that catch. And it was one of four moments where my neighbours must have thought, what's going on next door? Because that was when I was shouting. And there was that, there was the interception, there was the DK Metcalf touchdown, and then there was the missed kick at the end, which was, as Adam was saying, it's the first time in probably a good 2 or 3 years when, you know, woke the neighbours up in the early hours of the morning shouting at the TV. So it was nice to be able to do that again.
On first down, Wilson keeps. Surveys, nowhere to go, and back in the end zone, touchdown! What a catch by Tyler Lockett! Let's take a look. Catch, feet, that is unbelievable. If you'd have told me that his feet were in play, I'd have said there is no way that this ball's caught with his feet in the field of play. I mean, there was great coverage. I don't even know how Russell Wilson thought he could fit that.
Running the football, Chris Carson was the main bell cow, and he seemed to kind of grow as the game went on. In classic Marshawn Lynch, or as Pete Carroll said, it's a sign of a good back if he can get stronger as the game went on. 27 attempts, 118 yards, and heart attack-inducing touchdown catch as well, Rob.
Yeah, that was a very nervy. I mean, you get off the chair and you kind of think, yeah, a touchdown, and then he sort of fumbles it a little bit, and then he gets it on the second attempt. It's like, wow, phew, because they'd actually done all of the hard work of taking time off the clock and grinding down the Rams' long touchdown drive. They just needed the actual touchdown at the end, and then if he'd have spilled that, and they would have been 5 points behind, it would have been a real dagger to the heart. So, thank goodness for that. But on the wider point of Chris Carson, after a bit of a slow start due to the fumbles, he's right back on it now, and you can see him, he's running through people. There was one run on that touchdown drive which got them into the 10-yard line, and there was penetration into the backfield. He kind of just sort of dodged that and then exploded, accelerated to the second level. It was a big run. I think it was like a 10-15-yard run in the end. And when you sort of see that, you think, yeah, he's back on it. When he's driving through defenders like he did against Arizona, you think he's such a talented player. I mean, he's got the talent and the ability and the physical qualities to be up there with people like Zeke Elliott and the others who are hiring in the league. And it's starting to come to fruition now. And like I say, it's a bit of a slow start for the run game. It's there now. Pete Carroll wants them to be able to run the ball, and they're going to have to be over the next few weeks. They're going to have to keep this going now because, as I mentioned, they've got quite a tough stretch of games coming up.
Yeah, and Adam on Carson, it's kind of weird. It's quite interesting to actually watch a player gain confidence, as we have seen with Carson over the last two and a bit weeks, isn't it?
I was going to say, if anything kind of sums up the attitude that these professional sportsmen have and why I could never be one, it's the fact that 2 weeks ago, an entire region of a country was explaining how Chris Carson is now a fumble machine, and if he fumbles once more, he's going to lose his job. And he's bounced back with two performances in which he's looked rock solid, wanted to be a bell cow. And I just, it's amazing to me like how these guys are wired, that, you know, any normal human being, I imagine the first thing I would do would be to fumble if everything had been talking about me doing it for the last 2 weeks. And he's just come back and put in those two performances. And I thought, and I'm not kind of reflecting back on every game he's ever played, but I can't think he's ever played better than he did on Thursday night.
It's a pretty short list if he has. He kind of set the tone, as cliche as that is, for that team along and kind of helped Russell Wilson. I mean, he carried the ball 27 times, as we say. Russell Wilson, he threw it 23, so he's obviously a clear...
I can't think of a negative run.
No, I mean, there's one player that Alistair Corp tweeted out last night where the movie makes is so subtle, but he just gets past Aaron Donald. I mean, like, he's not Aaron Donald. It was really, really an impressive showing. Receiver-wise, Will Disley had on the Joe Root of the NFL, continued his ascension, 4 targets, 4 catches, and led the team with 81 yards. DK Metcalf, Rob, actually caught a touchdown on the right side of the field for probably the first time in his college and NFL career. What do you make of his usage early on in his rookie year and how he seems to be slowly getting more and more twists? And obviously, he's... you hope and expect that the game at this level is slowing down for him as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite an interesting discussion to have about DK Metcalf, because I think that he's had some opportunities, and then going into this game, he was sort of thinking, come on, DK, let's start using your physicality. I mean, in the sort of the 1v1 situations, there was one against Arizona when he dwarfed the cornerback, and it's a pretty, you know, low-level cornerback that he was up against, I can't remember the name, and it was a throw into the red zone, and he didn't win that 1v1 matchup, and you're thinking, come on, you know, these are the plays that you've been brought here to make. But then he can get downfield, as he showed against the Rams, and take the top off the defense, despite the fact that he's as big as he is, which is just incredible. He's got so much potential. And he needs time. You know, the expectations should be quite mellow for him this year. But the fact that he keeps sprinkling in these big plays is really good. I'd like to see him do a little bit more than, as you mentioned there, he was kind of running the same route every single game and wasn't really doing much else. But because of his speed and his quickness, he can actually do some of the things that Calvin Johnson used to do, which is sort of a little slant inside. You know, those are plays where if he just beats his man for speed off the break, I mean, people are going about his short shuttle at the combine, those things don't really matter when you're just running inside. And he can separate a little bit there. And then once you get him in space, he's going to be really hard to bring down because he has got that 4.3 speed. So I'd like to see a little bit more of that. I think it was good to sort of have him running across the field on that touchdown of play action to try and get him open in that way and doing a little bit more than just sort of throwing it up to him because he's got the size.
Yeah, Adam?
Do you think they trust him yet?
That's a good question because, like I say, in some of the games he hasn't necessarily won those matchups that you'd expect him to win. But then I think because of the offense is designed to get the ball downfield to work off the passing, the running game and the play action, I think that it was almost inevitable that other teams would use him differently. I think the Seahawks do just want to sort of use him predominantly this year, at least early in the season, as this explosive downfield receiver with the size to match and a red zone threat. And I think maybe as time goes on, if he builds that trust and as they work him more into a refined player, then he can do a lot more. But I think it's a decent start for him, but there's clearly a lot more to come.
Yeah. One more thing on the offense. DJ Fluker went out pretty early with a hamstring injury. And Jamarco Jones, Robbie, was a left tackle for Ohio State, a sixth-round pick last year. He barely missed a beat, and if anything, settled everything down on that offensive line unit, playing out completely on the side of the line at right guard. It was quite impressive against who he was up against, wasn't it?
It was. I think that it's something that's worth mentioning, though, is I'm pretty sure that Joey Hunt played against the Rams a year ago in a similar scenario and held his own. And Jordan Simmons did as well. And it's funny that it's against Aaron Donald and the Rams that the Seahawks kind of put these guys in there and they end up actually having really good games. So I don't really know what the reason is for that. But he did very, very well. I think that when you're playing Aaron Donald, as we saw with the early snaps, there was one where he just sort of sidestepped DJ Fluker as if he was kind of had his feet tied to the turf. And maybe sort of putting up these enormous 340-pound guards against Aaron Donald is not the way forward for this particular game, that having somebody who is a tackle who's kicked inside might be the way to do it. But it was very encouraging from Jones. When he was at Ohio State, his technique, usually it's the other way around. You know, the technique's terrible and doesn't translate to the next level. And you want some of the more athletic, explosive offensive linemen because then you can coach them up and teach them the technique. But with Jones, he had a terrible combine, which is why he lasted as long as he did. But when you watch the tape, he did everything. He was very rarely beat, and he kind of knew where he needed to be, and knew where to put his feet, knew where to place his hands. And I think we saw a little bit of that. And he has got some athleticism. I think the combine was a bit of a red herring. I think there were probably reasons why he had a bad combine. And we saw in this game that he has got some of the tools to make it work, and whether they view him as a future left tackle, right tackle or guard, there's definitely a player there. So assuming that Fluker doesn't play against the Browns, it'll be interesting to see who gets the start at guard, and hopefully it is Jones, and hopefully he can build on that.
Yeah, all what Rob's just said, Adam, is kind of what the noise is from Pete Carroll and the coaches in Seattle have been making since Thursday, that he got it straight away, and it's just his health injury wise last year kind of held him back a bit, but it was encouraging to see, and could see the team making a decision going forward, couldn't it, if it continues?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to kind of analyse offensive line when you're just watching the game going on, but my initial thoughts at the start of the game were that Upati and Fluker were really struggling on those first couple of drives, and this is probably reductive and kind of more a sense of just how the game was panning out, but once Fluker went out and Jones came in, it just looked a lot more settled on that line. I'm not sure if that's maybe overly simplistic, Rob.
No, I don't think it. I think it did. I can remember the first few drives, and you were thinking, are the Seahawks going to be able to throw the ball here because, I mean, as well as Wilson played, he had no time at all in those first couple of drives. Mm. And there was just nothing was happening. You know, they couldn't protect at all. And then the change happened, and it did just settle down. Now, whether that was just some adjustments there, whether that was Mike Solari sort of seeing things and saying, okay, this is what they're doing and working it out, I'm not too sure. But it really did look like as soon as the change is made, and I think we all love DJ Fluka, you know, what a guy, but he's not started this season particularly well. This is not his first game where he struggled, and he was against Aaron Donald and he got injured. So you don't want to point the finger too much, but he got hurt against Pittsburgh after a rough start. He had a very poor first half in Pittsburgh. He's not had a particularly great season so far. And it'd be interesting to see if Jones plays well against Cleveland, whether they just sort of keep him in there and have a bit of a run there, because they like this idea of big physical offensive line. But they also want to be able to produce. And in the first few series, it was tough sledding for the offensive line.
Yeah. On the defensive side, it was a pretty cool moment. Also, I think even cooler in the stadium. But the Tedrick Thompson interception is close to being up there with the Russell Wilson throw, isn't it? I don't mean the concentration, the ability to get that hand outstretched enough to get the ball, and the fact he didn't really seem to grumble the fact that it was called incomplete was a bit strange, but it was a pretty cool play for someone who's been dragged and dogged on for most of his Seattle career because he wasn't Earl Thomas. Adam,
I had the classic fan overly emotional need a play in the last minute moment where when I thought it was incomplete I exclaimed that, oh, you have to catch that. And then I saw a replay and I was like, oh, wow, he did catch it. And that's one of the best catches I've ever seen. Yeah. So I had a real swing in what I thought had happened versus what actually did. And it was great. I mean, and the reports from the locker room and from, you know, people that are on the beat and write about the team, it sounds like everyone was really buzzing for him. And he's clearly a popular member of the locker room. And they knew that he was struggling with the perception from the outside. So you got to be happy for a guy like that when he gets a great moment. So, yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, after 2 years of him being called a ball hawk, Rob, it was kind of cool to finally see an example of that, wasn't it?
Yeah, do you know what? I'm quite uneasy with this criticism that he gets, Tedrick Thompson, because you're absolutely spot on. It's because he's not Earl Thomas. And, you know, they're never going to be able to replace Earl Thomas. He's a one-off. And if you actually run through the league, I mean, if you were to say to just sort of a random NFL fan, name me five exceptional safeties in the league, they'd struggle to do it. They'd think of the obvious ones. But it's not there are just not that many of them. And in the draft coming up next year, you've got two at the top in Grant Delpit and as Isaiah Simmons, and then you've got absolutely nothing. So, you know, the college football is not producing these amazing safeties. So you lose Earl Thomas or you move on from Earl Thomas, you don't pay him, and then the guy comes in and people are expecting too much. And the way that Pete Carroll has moved to defend Tedrick Thompson in the press conferences when people have said, you know, what do you think about that? They need a play. And Pete was almost like taken aback by the fact that those questions were coming. And from what I've seen, he had a huge error, didn't he, against the Bengals right at the end of the half, which was a massive, massive mistake leading to a touchdown. But apart from that, he's not made plays, but I don't see the liability that people are claiming here. Like, you'd think if you look on Twitter, you'd think that Tedrick Thompson gets something wrong pretty much on every single snap, which is not the case at all. He just hasn't been able to do what he did at Colorado, which is 6-7 interception a year type playmaking. And hopefully this is a good start for him. And, fair play to him. It does seem to, and no one would say that Tedrick Thompson's playing brilliantly or that he's one of the top safeties, but it just seems that certain players get a little bit more criticism than others. And, you know, I think Jermaine Ifedi and Tedrick Thompson get their fair share, which is a little bit unnecessary, especially when the team's 4-1.
Yeah, and also one thing to that is how Tedrick Thompson is playing is the fact, apart from those night when Everett and Cup got relatively deep into almost both over 30-yard plays, but this defense without Earl Thomas, apart from that one John Ross play, hasn't been beaten deep, which is such a big part of how Pete Carroll sets his defense and coaches his secondary to play, isn't it, Rob?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's all about discipline. It's about knowing your role. You know, people say, why isn't Marquise Blair playing? Well, the reason Marquise Blair isn't playing is clearly because he's not ready to, because he hasn't picked up the intricacies of the defense. And what they don't want is somebody going in there and giving up the post or giving up a huge 30-yard completion downfield, because then the defense doesn't function. It is a bend-but-don't-break style of play. And Tedrick Thompson clearly more so than Delano Hill and Marquise Blair and the other guys that they've got there, just seems to have an understanding of the defense, which is what they're happy to go with. Because until they're able to, you know, bring in a top safety, you know, if they'd have traded for Minkah Fitzpatrick, it might have been different. Or if they go and get a Jamal Adams next season or whatever, then it could be different. But for the time being, this is what they've got. And, look, I mean, the defense is not playing particularly well. The pass rush is pretty quiet. You know, I think the linebackers, I think KJ Wright's done pretty well. Kendricks has been a bit hit and miss. Even Bobby Wagner's not quite had the impact that he had last year so far. And on the back end, there are very few people making any plays in the defensive secondary. You know, there aren't a lot of pass breakups. There aren't many interceptions. Hopefully, again, that will be a spark with Tedrick's interception on Thursday. And it has become a very offense-focused team. The whole identity at the moment is Wilson. It is the running game. It's not. That's my phone ringing in the hotel, by the way. It's not the defense as it has been in the past, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, one thing on that defense, Adam, talking about Clowney. If he's not there yet, as Pete Carroll says, but he's still, well, not setting the stat sheet alive. He is causing havoc, and that word again, fun, is what happens when you watch his number 90, isn't it?
Oh, he's so enjoyable to watch. And we did say, I think with Mike Dugar at the start of the season, you know, quite often we always wonder whether Seahawk pass rushers could get more, like, better numbers. But, you know, with the way the system is, are they maybe slightly constrained at what they can and can't do? And I think Clowney is maybe one of those people. I mean, as you say, the numbers aren't necessarily showing up in the stat sheet, but... and maybe this is just me being biased because I really wanted to sign him and I've always liked him as a player. But for me, I think the defense would be quite a fair bit worse and less explosive without him. I don't know what you think about that, Rob.
Yeah, I think the defense definitely would be a lot worse without him. I mean, he provides some attention for an opponent. You know, they have to game plan a little bit for him. And if he wasn't there, I mean, especially when Ziggy Ansah was out, you'd be really relying on, well, it would have been Barkevious Mingo, and Martin and others that would have to step up to the plate. And I actually think looking at it and looking at I think people would view him and say he's maybe not had the game-wrecking ability that he's had so far, but then very few defensive ends. You've had defensive ends who make sacks in the past, Frank Clark, Chris Clemens, but very few, you know, Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill were never sort of 15, 16 sack players. They were all kind of in that 10 to 12 range. I think that's probably where Clowney is, you'd expect him to be as well. And I think as he grows into the defense, remember, he didn't have much of an offseason, I think we may start to see some of that production. But actually, looking ahead, I think when you look at the free agency options next year and you look at the draft and you don't see a massive amount of options, and with the way that he's kind of settled into this and his age, he's only 26, I actually think that, having initially thought this was kind of just a rental for a year, I think as long as the price doesn't go too high, I think there's probably a fair chance that they might actually try and keep him and try and help him grow into this team, because he has got star potential. And look, he's not at his very best, but he still has a pick six, and he was credited with the forced fumble and the fumble recovery against the Rams. So he's the only one at the moment who's producing consistent turnovers, which is not usually what you expect from a defensive lineman, but somebody needs to do it. Yeah. He is.
Yeah, I think I'll text you, Adam, the minute the trade was made, this isn't going to be a rental, and nothing I've seen or heard suggests otherwise for Clowney. Does this kind of, you'd hope, as Rob said, if the prices get too high, that this is a long-term investment which makes the price they paid for him in trade value and, well, trade value or lack thereof is even more impressive if it is a 4-5 year stint for Clowney in Seattle, Adam.
Well, they've got the security that even if it does turn into a one-year rental, they've not kind of remortgaged anything to get it. You know, I think, what are they saying, that the two linebackers they sent to Houston have played about 80 snaps combined, I think, in this season so far. So, and obviously there's the third-round pick. But, yeah, they've got that security whereby it's not like they've given up so much that they're going to be hamstrung to do it. But he sounds really happy when you've heard him in interviews. The team sound happy with him, and yeah, you have to pay some players, so I can't see why he's one that wouldn't be very high up that list with Reed, I guess, in the off season to get a new deal.
Yeah, but overall though, it was just kind of just nice to finally beat this team, beat the Rams, and beat Sean McVay, even if it was with a bit of a slice of luck, Adam.
it was. I mean, it was a weird game in the sense that I think at four different times in the evening I said this is men against boys, and each of them were for a different team against the other one, because that, as we said at the start, I was watching thinking we can't get a yard here because they're just all over us. Then when we Jason Myers missed that field goal to make it, you know, whatever it could have been, I thought we're absolutely hammering this lot. Then they came back into it, and Everett was playing really well, and we didn't seem to be able to get a stop or you know, certainly get anywhere near a pass catcher. And then we had a massive rally, and we looked the better team going down the stretch. So it was just a great game, and yeah, as you say, just to beat them finally, especially in our own home where they've done us the last 2 years, just feels good. And as we said last week, that it's those kind of wins that if you believe you're good, that can often be better than actually being good.
Yeah.
So hopefully the momentum mentally this can carry could be immeasurably important going down into the next seven tricky games.
Yeah, and Rob, what happened last night on Monday Night Football suggests that the AFC West is going to be a bit of a dogfight this year, isn't it?
Possibly so. I mean, I watched the Cleveland game, and I actually I sit next to a San Francisco 49ers fan, and I'm anticipating that they're going to be very carried away when I go in today, because they'll have seen that and think that they're destined to have a tilt at the NFC Championship this year. But the Browns were horrendous. You know, the 49ers have beaten Pittsburgh at home with Mason Rudolph in his first start. They've also beaten the Bengals, and, you know, all right, they played the Seahawks very close in the first week, but have been a hot mess ever since. And they won on the road in Tampa Bay, which is an impressive win, but still probably the best time to play them in the first game, as opposed to, you know, recently they seem to have improved a little bit under Bruce Arians. So, you know, I think that I actually think that the Niners have definitely got something about them. I mean, the offense with Kyle Shanahan is exceptional. I've always thought he's a great coach. I mean, look what he did with Atlanta, and look what they've done since he left. And then defensively, they've got an amazing defensive line with people like Richard Sherman at the back end, who will always make plays. So there's definitely something there. You're not going to say that they're a pretender, but I do think that 4-0 is maybe a little bit of a mirage. I'd be interested to see how they get on against the Rams this week, but it is going to be a very competitive division, and you know, the Seahawks are right in there after a 4-1 start, but they've got some big tests coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, but one name, Adam, that Rob mentioned there, Richard Sherman. You don't have to miss him when you see him make plays like he did last night, Adam.
Still definitely in my top three favourite players of all time, and someone that I could just never, ever root against. No. So happy always to see him have a good time.
Yeah, but obviously the Seahawks roll on and go back on the road this week, so then we'll discuss more of that ahead of week six, but also touch on what Rob and Adam got up to this weekend. So yeah, before we move on to the Cleveland Browns game, Rob and Adam, you were both at Adam's second home, or maybe first home, I'm not sure, the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It seemed to be as universal a success as these international games have been. It's a close game in all corners. Is an impressive stadium and facility for the NFL, most importantly, Rob.
You know, it's my first time to the stadium, and could not have been more impressed. Just everything about it, the way it looks, the facilities within there. You know, having had the chance to go to in the press section and then into the press conferences afterwards, and sort of be able to move around the inner sanctum of the stadium and sort of see it, experience it, and it's so superbly designed. And then you get out there and you sort of look across, and I just think it just, again, the way that it is structured and built, the atmosphere really feeds down onto the field, in that you can feel the noise. You know, having gone to Wembley for so many occasions, I mean, I've been to Wembley for England games this year. I was at the FA Cup final. I've been there for numerous playoff finals. And there's only ever been one occasion when I've been at Wembley when the noise has been any good. And that was when Sheffield Wednesday were there off the back of, you know, nearly 15 years of misery, and their fans went for a bit of a party and made loads and loads and loads of noise. Apart from that, it's been horrendous going to Wembley. The atmosphere was just been awful. And the international games kind of had an exhibition feel about them, because, you know, you've got a lot of fans who are following different teams, were there for the occasion more so than to cheer for one team. And it does make it look like you're watching like a bit of a friendly. And yet, on Sunday, yes, there were a lot of Bears fans. Yes, there were a lot of Raiders fans. But the atmosphere was electric. It felt alive. It felt like you were actually at an NFL game in America. And I think that's down to the stadium. And I think that genuinely believe that every single NFL game that is played over here now needs to be played at that stadium. I'm not the biggest fan of the idea of a franchise over here because we all follow different teams. You know, I'm not going to move off the Seahawks to support the London Jaguars, or and I don't think many others in the country would. But I think it's great that they have these games, play them at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It is a fantastic venue and absolutely brilliant occasion on Sunday.
Alan?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I also have never been a big fan of the idea of a franchise, but largely because I think having more sporting events of any kind at Wembley is a waste of everyone's time, effort and money because it's just such a bad place to watch sport. But I think I would go and watch a London team play if they were playing there regularly because I got carried away supporting the Bears. I just decided just to pick the Bears with Bears fans around us. And I think I probably would get carried away watching a London team as a second team and support them there. And I wonder, A, whether that, you know, could manifest itself, but B, it's going to be interesting with the NFL having to go back to Wembley in 2 weeks' time. How do you reckon they're going to have to kind of position it? Because obviously Khan has always said the Jaguars are only going to play at Wembley, but who has a say in where these games are played? Because I think you're right, Rob, the only place they should be playing games is at the Tottenham Stadium, but it's going to be quite hard for them to keep praising it and bigging it up, knowing they have to go back to Wembley for games as well. I just wonder how you think that might transpire.
I don't think if I had to guess, Adam, I'd say they probably haven't anticipated that being an issue, and that it will be an issue now because they'll have all experienced what it was like in Tottenham Stadium at the weekend. And they will. I mean, Roger Goodell was there. I can't believe he didn't just sit there and think, this is so much better, like the rest of us.
Yeah.
I mean, Wembley's just, I hate to say it, because the old Wembley is, you know, as beaten down as it ended up being before it was rebuilt, just the atmosphere there was completely different to the new Wembley. And if you want, it's not a great place to watch sport. I'm sad to say that. You know, I'm going to go to the Euros next summer and see England play. And I am a little bit worried that the atmosphere is going to be pants, which it wouldn't be if the old Wembley, and it certainly wouldn't be if England were playing at Tottenham's ground. So, I think that they're going to have some big choices to make. They may have to compromise for a little while, but maybe sort of 3 or 4 years down the line, with Tottenham having built a stadium with the NFL, partly as a big part of the plans, not even a small part, but a big part of the plans there, that they have to acknowledge that. And if a team isn't going to move there permanently and just be based at Tottenham Stadium, then they probably should just play all the games there because it is absolutely tailor-made for that. It's tailor-made for any sporting event. I mean, it's a cracking stadium.
Yeah, it seemed to be the universal thing. I think Derek Carr spoke glaringly of the place and the whole feel of the week as well, compared to how he, obviously, the win probably helped massively for that, because after what happened to him at Wembley last year. But I think if the players talk, don't they? And if going to that stadium over Wembley could even be more beneficial to them, because it, as you say, it felt more like a proper NFL game than most games at Wembley do, Adam.
Yeah, I felt this was probably a seminal moment for the NFL in the UK.
Yeah.
And I think people like Goodell expressed that as much with their interviews with Richard Graves and the players in the locker room saying, you know, this is like a real locker room, Wembley's good, but this is this. And, you know, as it should be, they spent £1 billion on building it to make it all work. So you'd hope that it would be at the level. So it's great to see. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the how it compares when they go back to Wembley in a couple of weeks' time for the Jaguars game, or is there another game beforehand?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Fair enough.
Yeah, sorry. I think the percentage of, I mean, it seemed pretty likely anyway, but a London NFL team is almost assured after the first experience of Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Adam, did I say Tottenham Hotspur Stadium enough?
You did very well. Well done.
Russell, you told me how much you love these kinds of games that go down to the wire, the close ones. But this one was a little different for you. You were emotional as you came over here. Why?
Just a little emotional because, you know, we had the tribute to Paul today, and he gave me an opportunity, you know. And I'm just grateful. Just grateful. You know, win or lose, you know, God is good. And I'm just grateful that he gave me an opportunity. God did, and Paul, you know, and this organization, you know, I love playing here, you know.
Yeah, moving on though. Week six, the Seahawks travel to Ohio to face Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. Adam, if a game was played on paper, this would be a stern test, but it's not. And through 5 weeks, the Browns have probably flopped against hype more than most teams in recent years, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get one of two Clevelands on Sunday. It's going to be, you're going to see their best game of the season because they have to really rally, or they're going to be like they were last night. And really, it's going to be one of those games where you probably want the first half to be as short as possible, as few possessions as possible, try and stay in it and keep it close. And I think it's one of those things that having a rampant fan base like they have in Cleveland, it can be an advantage to you as the away team if it starts to get disgruntled. And I think that's the way they have to play it, and just try and assert themselves on it quickly. Don't let the game run away. As you say, talent-wise, Cleveland should be a really tough game on Sunday. But the way it's looking so far, you're more optimistic than you probably were when this game, you were thinking about it in May, June and July.
Yeah, Rob, the 2019 Cleveland Browns are the danger of giving a caretaker manager, as it were, the reins permanently, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's certainly struggled, and whether or not he can grow into that role remains to be seen. But they're a strange team, aren't they? They got absolutely hammered by the Titans in week one at home. They've got hammered by the 49ers. Their two wins were, you know, one that was fairly unimpressive against the beaten down opponent, and then there was another one where they've absolutely hammered the Ravens on the road, which is not easy to do. So I think the key for this game is going to be stopping the run, you know, taking away the running game from Nick Chubb. That's how they beat the Ravens. They absolutely destroyed them in the running game. Then if you can do that and you can put it on Baker Mayfield, he has been a turnover machine. So even though you are going to give up some plays to Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr., you're also probably going to get a couple of plays from him that he gives you the football. So that's that to me. It's all about stopping Nick Chubb. And also their offensive line is struggling. So can if you're only going to do pretty much a four-man rush most of the time, but can you get a bit of pressure? Is this a game for Ziggy Ansah and for Jadeveon Clowney to really show up as pass rushers? And can the offense stay on track as well? You know, Myles Garrett, I saw people, you know, this is the thing, is I mentioned about Tedrick Thompson, people seem to rag on Jermaine Ifedi an awful lot. And people forget that these players are on social media. I mean, this week, somebody asked me what I thought about a guard who plays for Tennessee. And I only replied, I said, he's a bit overrated. And the player liked the tweet. We didn't include him. He's searching for his name on Twitter. And I think as fans, we kind of, look, take a step back, guys. You know, don't necessarily call these players out on Twitter all the time, because I can guarantee that they'll be reading it. And one of the things I saw was, oh, Myles Garrett against Jermaine Ifedi. That's just, you know, I don't think that's going to be the, you know, big deciding factor in this game. You know, Myles Garrett may well get a sack or two. It's going to come down to stopping the run and staying on track and being able to run the ball and being able for Russell Wilson to do his thing and to try and put it on Baker Mayfield and for Baker Mayfield to do what he's done for the first, whatever, 16, 17 games of his career, which is turn the ball over.
Yeah, Adam, eight interceptions, 16 sacks on Baker Mayfield. Nick Bosa talked after last night's game that he was rattled from the first snap. I mean, we've talked earlier about the passing game kind of underwhelming in certain parts of the Seahawks season so far. But if there is an ascension coming, this is a good week to ascend another level and get after the quarterback, as Rob says, and make forced mistakes which seem readily available from him.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much evidence now that you shouldn't need to say it again, but having strength on the two lines is really where so many of these games are won and lost. And the Browns have clearly missed, you know, dropped the ball on that quite dramatically with what they've done to their offensive line. And in a defensive line of the Seahawks that are looking and going to be hungry to add to their numbers like we suggested, Sunday on paper again should be one of those days where it looks like they can really buck their ideas up and get onto those numbers, because everything else we've seen so far would suggest that there's going to be plenty of opportunities to get to Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, Rob, how do you think the two, Landry and OBJ, match up against this secondary, obviously most prominently, but how do you think their game and what they're asked to do in this offense when they actually get the ball matches up against the Seahawks secondary?
Well, I just remember them both having good games against the Seahawks. Landry with the Dolphins and Odell Beckham when he was first drafted when he came and played in Seattle with the Giants and gave Richard Sherman, you know, a bit of a doing over in that game, and Marshawn Lynch ended up winning it for them a number of years ago now. The thing is, though, is, I mean, they match up very well. You'd expect Odell Beckham to make at least one big play in this game. I mean, he's going to get the better of whether it's Trey Flowers or Shaquille Griffin or Jamal Taylor at some point in this match. He's Odell Beckham Jr. Yeah. I would also expect that because he can maybe do some of the deeper stuff and open up underneath for Jarvis Landry, that he may well have an 8-catch game, 80 yards. But it's, as Pete Carroll often refers to it, it may be a bit of a rope-a-dope game where they can kind of concede some yardage but keep things in front of them, force them to kick rather than go for touchdowns. And I think as long as you've got control over that running game, you've got a chance to win because, as I said, Mayfield will make mistakes and the offensive line is that bad in Cleveland that you would hope that eventually, whether it's a Bobby Wagner blitz, whether it is Jadeveon Clowney making a play, Ziggy Ansah, whether it's Jefferson who's been fantastic so far, you would think that some of them are going to be able to make the kind of plays that can keep the defense. You know, it could be a game where they give up 24 points but end up winning because the offense is playing very well. But, you know, sort of just limiting the damage might be key. But you have to expect a reaction because Cleveland was so bad against San Francisco. It's very rare that a team plays that badly 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, Adam?
Yeah, I just am quite excited to see it. I love watching Seahawks play on the road. I don't know why. There's something about the home game that's obviously formulaic and you know what everything looks like. And I always love just seeing, especially when you go to an AFC road game that you've not played for maybe 7-8 years. I always find these great. And I'm just excited to watch it. And it should be a great matchup. And one of those where I think you can, not that necessarily a win against Cleveland should dictate that much, but if you're 5-1 and you've had, you know, two big, you've won your two AFC road games, you know, that's a pretty good formula for cracking on for the rest of the season.
Yeah. What's the last time you played in Cleveland? That terrible, was it 7-6 game?
Yes.
Charlie Whitehurst. Oh, God. And that was like the first time everyone got a look at Cam and Sherm, wasn't it, as well?
It was definitely that Cam Chancellor had a huge hit in that game.
Yeah.
And you're right, the quarterback situation was a bit of a mess. And if I remember rightly, wasn't there a big play, a kick return or something that got called back rather spuriously, which impacted the game? But yeah, that was a massively disappointing game, that. And the time before, I think I'm right in saying they lost in overtime to Cleveland. And that was like the last time Cleveland got to the playoffs or finished with a winning season or something. And so it's not been a stadium where the Seahawks have had much fortune. So hopefully that changes this weekend.
Yeah, defensively for the Browns, they've been without their first two cornerbacks, Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams, last couple of weeks. But if they're there, it's two high draft picks against Tyler Lockett and DK, Adam.
Well, their defense was you know, slated to be one of the main reasons they were going to be a top team this year. So very typical that the team's two cornerbacks come back to face Seattle. Yeah, that's just, you couldn't ask for more of a cliche than that. But yeah, I mean, that should be a great matchup. And you would hope that that the X factor there can be Wilson putting the ball in a position where the other two cornerbacks can't get it and only our guys can, a la Thursday night.
Yeah, and also this week we see the 2019 version, Rob, of Michael Dixon in the Scottish Hammer. Jamie Gillen, who's probably, weird to say, but probably the one bright spot of the team. He won AFC Special Teams Player of the Month, and he's one of those field flippers of a punter, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, it's surprising that while there's been this influx of Aussie rules kickers into college football and now the NFL, that some of the rugby lads have not got on the bandwagon. And so great to see a Scottish kicker. My granddad was Scottish, so I was a quarter Scotsman myself. Good on him. It's just hope he has a terrible, so let's hope that he's punting a lot this weekend.
Yeah, he's punted 20 times through the first five, before last night, so he punted 20 times through the first four games. Adam, confidence and one to watch on either side of the ball?
Who's my one to watch? That is a good question. I think Well, David Moore got a touchdown on Thursday, and it's kind of the first time he's really, really sparked this year. And that was a great play, and I love, love, love seeing Marcus Peters on his ass looking like an idiot. Nothing better than that. So I'm going to back him to double it up and get another one this week on offense and defense. I think this is the week where we see the clowny smash on someone.
Yeah.
And it's going to be great. And I'm going to go with a 24-17 win for the Seahawks.
Rob, same for you.
Well, I think defensively, yeah, Clowney's the one that I think this is a good matchup for him. But I think I'll go with, to provide a different answer, I'll go with Quinton Jefferson because he's had such a fantastic start to the season. He's consistently making plays. He's not just had like one good game that's bolstered his stats. He's been a consistent feature. And I do think this is an offensive line that you can get after. And I think that, as I've said a couple of times, that I think stopping the run is going to be very important. And I think Will Disley, again, you know, just the way that he's played, I think when you actually look at this Browns defense, it's very young, maybe has a bit of a soft middle. I think that, you know, they've got the cornerbacks outside, they've got some talent on the defensive line up front, you know, with all of the big names they've got there. But I think underneath and on that second level, there are going to be some gaps. So I wouldn't be surprised if Will Disley has a big game, you know, maybe another 80, 100 yards and a couple of touchdowns here.
I'd agree. I think defensively, again, to be different, I think Trey Flowers, I mean, Shaquille Griffin's having as good a start to the season as he's had in the same, obviously not the same level as Russell Wilson, but I think he's finally looking the part of that kind of close to being a shutdown corner somewhat. I think Trey Flowers is going to be up against it with Landry. I think a lot of attention will be paid to OBJ, so I think Landry could eat against him when he's facing again. Offense, I think it's one to see what Jamarco Jones looks like, with actually a team having tape on him, possibly game planning for him, and just see if that is something we can see being a decision the team have to make if Luka does miss it, which it seems to be the suggestion that he will on Sunday. I think the Seahawks will win. I think the Seahawks will win pretty handily. I think it'll be a double figure win on the road and kind of do nothing to quell optimism and the get carried away nature of Seahawks Twitter, Adam.
Yeah, and then with your trip to the Baltimore game the week after, you'll be rampant on that play.
That's also lined up to be a pretty cool weekend with obviously Seahawks, Roger Daltrey, the Seattle Sounders, and Washington Huskies playing the Oregon Ducks all in the space of 36 hours. It's going to be quite a weekend, isn't it, over there?
I'm very jealous, so thank you for reminding me that I'm missing out again.
one more thing on the guy you mentioned, Rob. I asked Adam, and I don't think he answered me. Obviously, it's a lot of recency bias and what have you done for me lately, but is it on the D-line, is it one of Quinton Jefferson and Jerron Reed who they pay this offseason?
No, I mean, they've got an estimate of about $75 million to spend in the offseason. So they've actually got a fairly sizable chunk of cash to play with. So if they wanted to keep Reed, Jefferson and Clowney, for example, they could do it. Now, whether or not that's realistic, you know, to get all three to sign up. But then you could have said a year ago, it's not very realistic to get Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner done and to find a solution to the Frank Clark situation, which they did. So I think they have to. It's a bit too early to say what they will or won't do. We need to see what Jerron Reed does when he comes back. I've no idea how much Jefferson would cost given the way that he's played. And it could be that he ends up just doing well enough and getting just enough attention that another team actually gives him a bit too much money that the Seahawks are easy with. And it's also important to remember that they have kind of plugged guys into the defensive line quite readily over the years. So, I mean, no better example of that than Clowney and Ansah this year. So they might sort of think, well, we can plan accordingly. You know, there was a lot of talk they liked Everson Griffin and we're interested in bringing him in this year. Well, it's very likely that he will be released from Minnesota at the end of the year, given the contract structure. So he could be an option for them. So, you know, they've got some. I think it's very, very early, but I do think that if Clowney has even a decent year, I think that given the way he plays the run and the huge physical potential that he has, I said earlier, I initially thought definitely just a rental this, but I think as time goes by, I'm sort of thinking a little bit differently, thinking there might be a chance to keep him.
Yeah, Adam, did you answer my question? I can't remember.
I didn't. I'm going to skillfully evade it like Russell Wilson in the pocket because if I give you an answer, I'm just going to get it wrong.
Well, moving on quickly before Rob gets another phone call from the the reception desk of his hotel ask him to get out. Quick spin in the
That is. Can I just say, that is exactly what they said when they rang. They said, they said get out of the hotel.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
There's so many. I think we have to start with the Penn State alumni yesterday who sent a letter to a player saying, "My wife and I are proud and older graduates of Penn State. We follow all Penn State, blah, blah, blah. We love it all. Though the athletes of today are certainly superior to those in my days, we miss the clean-cut young men and women from these days. Watching the Idaho game on TV, we couldn't help but notice your, well, awful hair. Surely there must be mirrors. Don't you have parents or girlfriend who have told you that shoulder-length dreadlocks look disgusting and are certainly not attractive? You'll certainly be playing on Sunday in the future, but we've stopped watching the NFL due to the disgusting tattoos, awful hair, and immature antics in the end zone." The guy even kindly put his name on there, Dave Peterson, it looks like. So well done, Dave Peterson, for just outing yourself as just a horrible racist, and you deserve to get straight in the bin.
Yeah, like I tweeted to you last night, you can just easily assume what that person looks like, can't you, as well?
Very much so, very much so.
Yeah, it's yeah. I mean, the fact he typed it, it's not handwritten, he's typed it, reread it, printed it off, and sent it over to Penn State is just remarkable. Rob, anyone for your bin this week?
No, but I have to say that some of us would really appreciate the opportunity to have some dreads. for some of us, those days are long gone. I think I'm going to try and take a positive note. I'm not going to put anybody in the bin this week because the Seahawks are 4-1, and I want to encourage positivity and positive vibes. I like this idea that we're going to go to Cleveland and hammer the Browns this weekend, 5-1. So positive energy this week.
You have also put the whole of Seahawks Twitter in it already, so it'd be silly to do it.
Right, you see, that's it. It's just a repetitive recycling of Seahawks Twitter in the green bin. So there we go.
Yeah, I think for me, Adam, you talked about a few weeks ago that everyone in Miami doing what they're doing down there. But I think at the same time, Washington, I think one of the guys from the Ringer tweeted that all the stuff about Miami, but they're trying to be this bad in some facets. The Washington Redskins aren't trying. They're just happening to be this turgid and terrible. I mean, the fact that Colt McCoy started on Sunday ahead of Haskins wasn't great last week. Ahead of their big banner draft pick, like this April, is one thing. But then for Bruce Allen to come out and talk about the culture like he didn't understand what the word culture meant, it kind of just like was an automatic answer. Yeah, this is everything's going fine. Everything's fine. It kind of like almost like the captain on the Titanic at some point. But that franchise is not going to turn around with that power couple at the top of it, is it, Rob?
No, it's not. And, the thing about that, it's interesting, there's the Bengals and there's the Redskins who have not tried to tank, but are tanking nonetheless. And the Redskins are a mess. I mean, this Trent Williams thing is crazy. You know, trade the guy and get some picks, build forward. You know, what's the vision here? You know, you draft a quarterback, you know, and then you fire your coach weeks into the season. So either fire the coach and then draft someone who can grow the quarterback from year one, or don't draft the quarterback and just go with the coach and think, well, we'll give him one more year and then we'll move on there. You know, there doesn't seem to be any real thought process with the Redskins. And they've gone from a team that a few years ago were actually competing for the NFC East and, they had Kirk Cousins and RG3 and they had some decent seasons in there. And they just look like an absolute disaster zone at the moment, which when you actually look through the roster, they've acquired some decent players over the years. Mm. They shouldn't be as bad as they are. Yeah. It just goes to show, once again, your ownership matters. And the owner in Washington and the guy that he's put in place to run the team are not the people who should be doing that job.
I said to Stu last week, ask him quick questions, be the last one I ask because I know you're pushed for time, but can you see top quarterbacks in the first round maybe start refusing to go to some of these teams? Like, if you look at how Josh Rosen's career has basically been ripped apart by awful teams, and now what Haskins looks like he might have to put up with for three more years, can you see players maybe taking a stand up against some of this stuff and just saying, nope, not doing that?
Absolutely. I think that definitely is a possibility. I think that this year is a bit strange because I don't think, for example, Tua Tagovailoa or Justin Herbert or Jordan Love, whoever is considered to be the number one overall pick next year, is going to do that, because the thing is, and say either pull a move like that or say I'll come back to college for another year. And there's one simple reason, and it's Trevor Lawrence, because he will be declaring the following year and will be the number one overall pick, all being well. So if they hold on, they're basically saying, I don't want to be the number one overall pick, and I do still think that is an ambition for some people. You know, it's a great caveat to say that you were the number one overall pick in the draft. So I do think we'll see probably Tagovailoa going to Miami, and you would imagine that the Bengals will draft one of these guys as well. But it's very important. Look, a career can be. Look how emotional Russell Wilson was after the game on Thursday, thanking Paul Allen and the Seahawks for being part of that organization, because he knows full well if he'd have gone to Washington, if he'd have gone to Cincinnati, if he'd have gone to the Jets or somewhere like that, then none of this possibly would have happened, and that he would not have been able to achieve what he wants. And you, Dwayne Brown, dissatisfied in Houston. Jadeveon Clowney, dissatisfied in Houston. Go to a franchise where things are working. Jalen Ramsey, not happy with Tom Coughlin, wants to move out. You know, there are a handful of teams that I think players are going to want to play for, and there are going to be a handful of teams that players are going to really not want to play for. And until the owners and the people they employ to run their teams either change or they change their mindset, it's only going to get worse before it gets better.
Well, you are pushed for time, so we'll quickly wrap up. Where can people catch you on social media? And obviously, your draft blog will...
Yeah, it's very busy at the moment. You know, it is a draft blog, but we do talk about Seahawks all year round. And there's a lot of people on there, good community. It's a positive community. There's nobody, you know, slagging each other off or anything. So if you want to join in the discussion, please do. Social media is at Rob Staton. And, yeah, check out Seahawks draft blog.
Any Seahawkie players have caught your eye quickly?
Well, there is. I'm glad you've given me the chance to plug this. I've just posted a top 50 watch list for the year. And although some of the teams at the top end are obviously not going to be in range for the Seahawks, though, I think there's a good group of offensive linemen. So if they have to replace Jermaine Ifedi, who's a free agent, I think there's some good right tackles in this draft. It is very, very busy with wide receivers. So if they wanted to add another one of those to replace Doug Baldwin and to add to Metcalf and to Lockett, there's some options there. A bit little light on defensive linemen and very light on safeties apart from the two at the top. But there are a good collection of cornerbacks in this draft. So go and check out the top 50, and there are some very interesting options on there.
Yeah, so this is the 99th episode. The next time we podcast will be the 100th. If you just want to tweet out when you can, we are still trying to get RW3 on the podcast, but it seems to be slim hope and slim chance of that. If you want to get involved with the podcast, we do encourage and urge you to, on all the usual means, on the Facebook page, UK Seattle Seahawks fans, the Pedestrian Podcast, also on Facebook, thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. You can catch catch the podcast on also on Podbean, iTunes, and on Spotify. Also, ukseahawks.com. UK Seahawkers on Instagram. But until next time, enjoy the game this weekend, and wherever you watch and whatever the corner will you watch it from. But this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
And I have to ask just about the accuracy, Tyler, because it's one thing to make a play, like I get it, but it seems to me like he's almost more accurate than he is at any other time. Does it seem that way to you?
I just think he's been great at it ever since he played football.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that you can't really teach. Either you got it or you don't. That's something that people try to teach, but he already incorporated that in his game a long time ago. So for him to be able to do that, you have to be able to have special players around him to be able to know how to keep plays alive after the play breaks down. And that's what we have on our team. We have a lot of great receivers, a lot of great tight ends and running backs that know how to stay alive when he scrambles, and you've seen it tonight.